Hey everyone, I have a question. Are you listening to this episode on Himalaya? If you are, awesome, because you're already using the best new podcast app out there. If you're not, you're missing out. Not only does Himalaya have a ton of cool features like curated podcast lists and collections, along with personalized recommendations, but our new members-only version of the Professor Is In podcast is only available on the Himalaya app. So be sure and download it, check it out, and keep an eye out for our members-only content. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Professor Is In podcast. I am Kel Weinhold. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at K-E-L-W-E-I-N-H-O-L-D.
And I am Dr. Karen Kelski, and you can find me on Twitter at Professor Is In and on Facebook at The Professor Is In. Please join us there. Big, active community right now, very much dedicated to sharing our collective wisdom and resources about how to cope with the switch to teaching online, campus visits online, and all of the other disruptions of COVID-19.
So that's what we're actually here to talk to you about. We were getting ready to do the next thing in line for our podcast, and realized that we probably needed to jump the queue a little bit and have a conversation about COVID-19, its impact on your lives, and how you can manage it. So that's a little bit of what we're going to talk about today.
And just to be really, really clear, we are recording this on March 13th. And I don't know about you, Kel, but I had a very strong sensation yesterday, March 12th, that it was an inflection point in terms of a lot of the real degree, the real level of crisis emerging in full view on March 12th. That doesn't mean that's true for everybody, especially the experts who are able to track it in more detail. But for me, just as a generic person sitting out there, a lot of stuff just came hurtling into clear view. And I really thought, you know, I think I'm going to remember this day. Stock markets, of course, as well as the infections of so many people, the infection rate, the catastrophic U.S. failure of testing, and the lies being told by our president and administration. And then, of course, the school closures and university closures and cancellation of massive events. And understanding for me, and you and I were talking about this earlier, the impacts that we aren't capable of understanding in terms of the, say, things like the supply chain and, you know, our basic, that invisible economic underpinning that people who aren't economists are not used to thinking about, but that we take for granted. And what is our life going to look like in a week or a month?
Right. So let me be clear. We're not going to do a 30-minute podcast on why everybody should panic. It's actually, this is a little bit reminiscent of the reason we started our Facebook Lives. We started our Facebook Lives way back right after the election because people were so stressed and they were so overwhelmed with how to get work done and how to think and how to see themselves within that.
In a state of psychic onslaught.
Right. And so that's really what we wanted to do today is go back to those early days of the Professor Is In Facebook page.
Facebook Live,
I'm sorry. And by the way, if you go to the Facebook page right now and look in videos, you can actually look at those early recordings where I walk through several sort of strategies of how to deal with when you can't deal, which I think are incredibly useful. But we're going to talk about them today. They happen to be, Karen's looking at me like, what are you talking about? So we are in the process of transcribing all of those and downloading them, uploading them elsewhere. And in fact, they are available in the Himalaya app, if you're a member. But in that process, I have to make them active again. And so they're active again.
Oh, how
and
funny.
They were paused years ago, and now they're active again. So that's what I mean.
I see.
And if you're a Himalaya member, you can go to the shared area and see those. And if
you get access to
them.
Right,
right. Yeah. So that whole, there's a whole page of them available so you can look at them.
And they were very much, just to reiterate what you just said, they were very much a community intervention to try to provide a gathering space every Friday morning for 30 minutes of just, you know, maybe a little spark of sanity or of
hope.
Of hope.
Right.
Right. And community, because in the end, and if the Trump administration has shown us nothing else,
it has shown us nothing.
It has shown us that the only real, reliable antidote to the despair and hopelessness of our current moment is digging deep into community of all kinds, both in person. And by the way, that's an interesting thematic to consider in the time of COVID-19 because of the issues with in-person contact. But but in person with your, but also online, which is so important for so many of us right now.
So let's do a revisit of those days and understand that, like Karen said, the first and most important thing in weathering this, and like we said, you're going to listen to this in about a week and a half from when we're recording it. And we are in a time and a place that we don't know what's going to be going on in a week and a half. Just like at the very beginning of the Trump administration, we didn't know what was, every week was some new thing that we were trying to adjust to, some new racist, sexist, you know, money grubbing thing that knocked us backwards. So we don't know what's going to be happening. And that's really the first thing that I want to help you handle is to accept that, right? To start to let the truth sink in as much as you can for your own mental health, that there are some things that are out of your control and that we have to start in this process of stability, start by telling the truth. And there's a, you know, with Unstuck, you know that with Unstuck, I do, it's the first of the three values of Unstuck is tell the truth. So the truth is, for many, many of you, you're not going into campus. You're trying to teach in platforms that you're not used to. You, if you're an adjunct, truthfully, I don't know what's happening with adjuncts, but there's a very significant chance that your next semester, maybe you won't have work. There's a lot up in the air. And one of the things that's really hard to do is to sit with that discomfort, to know I have no idea what's going to happen next, because it's scary.
Yes.
Right?
It's very, very scary.
Right.
I mean, you know, Buddhists and so on have long maintained that any illusion we have of control is illusory.
Right.
Anyway, but certainly there are some levels of control that have been more or less pretty reliable until now, mostly revolving around if you send your kids to school, you can pretty much expect them to continue to be at school. Send your kids to college, you can have been able to assume they would stay at college. All of a sudden, I have two children at home.
See,
no longer
and,
at college.
You know, and I would argue with that is that we comfort ourselves by thinking that we can send our kids to school, we can do all those things, because that's the way we get through the day. It's the way we keep from...
How many times have you seen colleges and universities send all their students home?
No,
when?
I'm not talking
Has that
about
ever
that.
Happened?
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the people who send their kids to school and they die at school.
I know there's that.
I'm not saying it's comfortable. I'm not saying it's not in some ways a coping mechanism to not think about that. I think it absolutely is. And I think that if we can start to practice not fighting with reality, that we will have more energy. I guess that's the you know, the whole, when we wrote down sort of the gist of this talk that we wanted to do today was really like, you know, adjust, be kind to yourself, lower your bar. That's really what we wanted to come across. And to me, that has to start with understanding that this is the reality. We can't fight with it and have want it to be something else. We can, and it's exhausting. And so I'm approaching it from maybe too backward away for these disquieting times. But part of that for me is to begin to just sort of inoculate myself with little tiny drops of, there's a whole bunch I can't control. And if I try to control it, it exhausts me. So where can I just accept I don't have control so I can focus on what I can control? That's kind of where I was headed with that.
Yeah.
So first rule of Unstuck and first rule of my productivity work is tell the truth.
So I would say the truth right now, for people who are our audience, and there are many audiences dealing with many truths, but for academic audiences, the truth is that you've been tasked to do something that is almost impossible. I mean, if you've been asked to move all your classes online in the space of a weekend or a week with no additional support, that's not really a reasonable request. And if you have been asked to do that in an environment where suddenly your children are at home instead of being at school, that's an even less reasonable request. And then if you are in some way, maybe your partner has a job that they can no longer go into, and so then there is financial stress that you didn't have a week ago. These are massive, massive disruptions.
Yeah.
And I think that what might happen, and I'm not saying I know for sure it does, but I think what might happen with people who are kind of codependent and addicted to external validation and used to being the smartest kid in the room and so on, is that you just ramp up your scramble to be like, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it all, I can do it all, I can do it all. And I think for me, where my mind goes when you say tell the truth is these are not doable tasks.
They're not doable if what we're asking ourselves is to do it at the level that we will do when we are not in crisis.
Right.
They're all doable.
Right.
They're all doable.
Of course. You can muddle along doing something online with your children screaming at your feet and
right.
But know,
I mean,
running out of toilet paper. Yeah, it's totally doable.
But see, to me, that's the telling the truth part. Right.
Right. That's the telling the truth.
That's the telling the truth. It's like, okay, so I used to drop my kid off at daycare and go to work and do all these things and be motivated by being around other people. And I had all these structures in place and I don't have them anymore. We can expend a tremendous amount of energy running around with like our hair is on fire saying, I don't have these. I don't have these. The truth is you don't have them. Now what? Then if you assess your situation truthfully, not the life you wish you had, right? That's what I mean by like telling the truth, is that you can wake up every day and wish you had your class back and you wish you were doing those things and it doesn't serve you. So if we tell the truth and say, this is what's going on right now, now what am I going to do? And we step back from this idea that we have to do it perfectly. And luckily I've seen some really great writing around this, just encouraging people to lower the bar, to quit trying. You can't do this.
There was that article. What was it called? Do a Bad Job?
Yeah.
In your online class.
Right. And I understand that, you know, I absolutely can almost hear the cringing of people hearing this saying, but that means the students are going to suffer. And that means, yes, guess what? We are all going to suffer. This is what, well, we're all going to be made uncomfortable. We will suffer if we keep grabbing onto it, saying it shouldn't be like this, or this is, oh, blah, blah, blah. It is. So just trying to say, this is what, these are the resources I have. And this is the job I can do.
Right. And also the larger political argument that is starting to come out in different pieces, that this wholesale adoption of online teaching,
if you do it really well,
if you do it really well, could basically be catastrophic for the potentiality for in-person teaching to come back in any way. And it was already under so much duress to begin with and defunding. So, you know, it's actually, there's a lot of self-interest in doing as bad a job as you possibly can. I mean, I'm being facetious because the students deserve the education they paid for. Miyako, our daughter, who's at Berkeley, but has now, you know, they switched online like everyone else, said, I can't believe it. I'm like, I was at Berkeley. Now I'm at the world's biggest online school. I'm doing online school. I said, yeah, University of Phoenix and Berkeley. Anyway.
But I do want to pause in that, right? Because it's not just so simple as to tell the truth. And Miyako is a perfect example. It's painful.
Yeah.
She's losing a tremendous experience. She is deeply involved in college voter recruitment. She's deeply involved with all of these projects that are building community at Berkeley. So there's grief in that. So we not only as we face our new reality, we also have to be willing to feel that loss. And I see being mad at it as not feeling it. So I, you know, waving our hands, like, you know, shaking our fists at the sky.
Well, I'm not at the sky. It's at the fuckwad in the White House.
Yes. Well, we can, I'm willing to shake my fist at the fuckwad in the White House. In fact, I was thinking today that if anyone of our circle dies of this disease, I will lay it directly at the feet of the Republicans. Mm-hmm. I will, that there, anyone, and I'm saying anyone who dies, I would do that, but I'm not exceptionalizing and saying, but if it's your family, I'm not going to do that. That's not what I mean. What I mean is it just flashed for me today because we have three elderly parents. Karen's mother is alive and both of my parents are alive.
And a couple immunocompromised people.
Right.
And the
family members.
The immediate family.
And so I have this just sort of underlying stress every day. I'm sure that my parents are sick of my, you know, every 3 days phone call. How are you handling this? Are you washing your hands? Are you still going to water aerobics? Have you canceled your lunches with your friends and are you having them at home? I'm sure they're just like, could you please go away? So there's a huge loss and there's a huge fear. And those things are all true. And that's the other thing I want us to be able to tell the truth about is I'm scared and I'm sad and this wasn't my plan. I keep thinking about those kids who have devoted all this time and now their graduations are canceled.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, of course, because we live in Eugene and the University of Oregon is here and I'm a very big women's basketball fan at the University of Oregon and they were very, very likely to play for a national championship this year. And my whole cohort was figuring out how we were going to go. My dad loves it. And I just keep thinking about those seniors mm-hmm. who that's it.
Yeah.
It was all right there and it's gone.
Right. And not an act of God either. Not a hurricane or a tornado or an earthquake, but malignant, irresponsible leadership. Right. That led directly to this.
So really taking that loss and that grief and that all of that, dealing with it and channeling it in a place that can work for you is what I would say. So if you can channel that into activism, if that's what you want to do right now and you just want to get totally devoted to the Senate campaign to get rid of every Republican senator that you can name or that is up, great.
I think that might be a little premature, honestly.
I'm just tossing out ideas. Yeah.
I don't know that anyone, I mean, we don't know, of course. We don't know how people are coping, but I know how I feel and I know how the internet is feeling. I know Twitter is an always interesting finger on the pulse of the zeitgeist, is just bewilderment, confusion.
Right.
Logistical scrambles.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And so, yes, I agree with you. So I went on a little diversion there, not digression, I guess I should say. Not surprising for me or us mm-hmm. that we wander off, but I agree with you. People are just gobsmacked. It's probably the exact, finally, the perfect use for gobsmacked.
Yeah.
So in the face of that, what will serve us is to adjust our expectations. So mm-hmm. I feel like there are a lot of academics out there, especially those people who are in their first couple years of tenure, on the tenure track.
Mm-hmm.
People coming up on supposed to defend, right? You're supposed to defend in May.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to defend in June. People who are supposed to be going on field work. People who are off in their field work and trying to figure out how to get back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of people who suddenly it's like, just like those basketball players, mm-hmm. right? I had my next 5 weeks planned out mm-hmm. and I was going to be playing in the national championship and now it's all blown up.
Mm-hmm.
So that grief part, but then that we have to figure out how to adjust our expectations to our new normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the first step out of the fog.
Right.
Right.
I also just want to give a plug here just because this is quite important to me and it may be obsolete by the time you guys hear this. But there's still a quite sizable proportion of the American population that is saying that social distancing is the imperative that we're getting from various experts to stay away from groups and to cancel events and cancel school is hysteria and overreaction and panic. And with the acknowledgement that maybe when you're listening to this, this is no longer an active dialogue, But, you know, to me, it's actually the opposite. It's actually very Zen-like considered intentional action, because it is actually acting in the greater good.
Right.
It's not acting from individual fear. It's actually the opposite of acting from individual fear, especially for those of us who are not at immediate threat of anything particularly terrible from the virus. So in that case, it really is about, we are all vectors. Every one of us is a vector to someone who is vulnerable, who is more vulnerable, mm-hmm. and who could die from it. Or not just that, but also overtaxed hospitals, mm-hmm. and truly catastrophic choices such as the Italian doctors are having to make now because they can't save everybody. So it's, what do they call it? Catastrophe medicine, I think. There's an actual name for it called catastrophe medicine. Oh, yeah. Anyway, life or death decisions on the spot. So I just want to put a plug in that this is not panic, not hysteria, and not fear. It is acting in care and love for the greater good in the community. And I hope we can all get behind that.
That's my new mantra. Self-distancing is love. Mm-hmm. I mean, social distancing is love.
Love in action.
Yeah. Especially when you think about, you just don't know the people around you and how much at risk you're putting them. But getting back to adjusting your expectations. So if you thought you were going to finish that dissertation and defend it in May, but you can't get to something you need to do, or you thought you had to get 2 articles out this year because it's your second year on the tenure track, or you had every intention of having your book manuscript ready to go by the end of the year and you were on a roll, and now you're at home, you're trying to figure out how to deliver these courses, and your 2 kids are right there with you. The only solution is to adjust your expectations. Mm. The only solution.
Something has to give.
Right.
So a lot of things have to give. Right. It isn't even just in the singular, it's the plural. So, you know, can you guys all just heat up a can of soup for dinner?
Mm-hmm.
Can you...
Here's a movie.
Put the kids in front of TV. So on Twitter, there's going to be a very large social experiment in the exposure of young children to many hours of television exactly. over an extended period of time.
Right, we're going to find out.
But then someone else pointed out there's no control group, so...
Right. but those things that you didn't want to be the parent, that, mm-hmm. and I think for women especially, this becomes a guilt thing, right? I should be... And I heard somebody say the other day, that if you could separate out the economics and the everything else, it would be kind of nice to just be home with your kids for a week or two. And I thought, I wonder if it really would. I wonder if people really feel that way.
That has not been my experience.
So, because a lot of times people are working and raising kids because they enjoy both, but they don't want to do either of them all the time. Neither. And so...
And not under conditions of a pandemic.
Right. I mean, it was like separating all of those things.
Oh, yeah, you did say that, right. Yeah.
Right. So, but we're not in that. We're under stress. You still have the articles. But the thing is, you're not going to get them done at the pace you were before. So you have to adjust your expectations of yourself in that moment. And I think what you said before we started about your expectations of what even what you're doing is going to look like is so important.
What do you mean?
The whole idea that like what you're going to do is going to be perfect.
Oh, well, I mean, I wake up in the morning and my head is a swirling mass of confusion. And then it mostly remains that way for the entire day. And I am working. The professor's inn is open. The lights are on. We are all working really hard.
Because we work at home.
Well, so. We work at home. So we are scarcely disrupted at all. The only disruption is the college kids are now home. Mm-hmm. That's quite a surprise.
Well, I was talking about the conversation we had about lowering your expectations of what you do, that sloppy is okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right? My goodness, yes. Back in the day, I used to find those, you know, jovial sort of scary mommy kind of mommy blogger things of like, you know, before they got all annoying and hyper-commodified, you know, basically the window onto the actual chaos of your life, like, you know, that your kids actually did eat cereal for dinner 3 nights in a row, and, you know, and this and that and the other thing. And you have had a pile of not folded laundry for, you know, 5 weeks mm-hmm. on your bedroom floor. I've always found that really liberating, really, really just, it just helped. And the internet, I love the internet for this reason, and I will be the internet's greatest defender. as long as I can imagine, because it did provide the window onto everybody else's lives behind the scenes. I mean, Facebook's not great for that, but Twitter is, which is if people are candid and they tell you what their life is really like and what they're really struggling with and how badly they're really doing, and you realize you're not alone.
Right.
And it just has helped me so much in my mental health.
Right.
So, yay, Twitter. But anyway, that was the big context. But now there's the coronavirus context, which is we are just in pandemonium right now. And so, you know, not only is the article not getting done, but, you know, lunch isn't getting made.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe people aren't even getting out of bed because mm-hmm. they're fucking terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're snapping at your kids and your partner because everybody is so stressed,
right.
And nobody is at their highest self. And so it's just like, let's even set aside the article you're not writing for tenure. Let's just say, you know, can you manage to drink some water maybe?
Right.
Just keep yourself hydrated.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I was talking to a client the other day who had gotten a little bit stuck, and longtime client, and was just looking for a little bit of encouragement to get up and get moving again. And she asked me how I was. And I said, you know, I'm all right. I have a gigantic basket of laundry that's been sitting here, clean laundry that has been sitting here waiting to be folded. And that's sort of the state of my state. And she said, hey, it's clean. And I thought, damn right.
Right?
Right? My yeah. laundry's clean.
I know.
And just because I'm pulling my underwear out of the hamper.
Yeah, pull the clean underwear out of the
right.
hamper. And by the way, this is no shaming of people with dirty underwear.
Right.
You know, nobody died from dirty underwear. Right. It's fine.
I'm just saying, that we have to keep having those reminders that, yeah, and that's what I'm doing right now. And mm-hmm. that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's okay to put on the same shirt. And, you know, people have been online lecturing about get up and get dressed and act like you're at work. And I will tell you, it is a huge adjustment when you are used to working in a social environment and you go home to work. It's hard. It's an adjustment. And
that's
so there's
true.
Another expectation thing of don't expect yourself to be as, first of all, expect if you don't have other pressures on you, that suddenly you're going to be so much more productive and be a little bit like, oh my gosh, look at how being at work really screws with my productivity. But don't be surprised if that lasts 2 days and then you get completely lost mm-hmm. and can't stay focused because mm-hmm. you're used to the juice of the social.
Right.
And it is
and there's Netflix
hard.
Right there.
There's Netflix. And so it's really hard. And again, telling the truth and accepting that so you can set expectations based on that.
We should do a podcast episode on working from home because both of us had to make that adjustment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And That's we certainly have come up with some insights about it.
So listen, we have to wrap this up today because we're doing a short podcast. Well, it's not short. It's our 30 minutes. And I see by the clock, we are over our 30 minutes. So the last thing that I want to leave you with is a technique that I use with the people that I work with on Unstuck. And it's a technique I used to use when I used to run before my knees did not allow that anymore. And one of the things that runners will tell you is don't look up the hill. If you're going to start to run up a hill, do not raise your head and look up to the top of the hill because your brain and everything else will say, fuck no, I'm not doing that. So if you find yourself being overwhelmed, if you find yourself starting to tabulate everything that's not getting done and everything, and you're looking out at tenure and you're looking at this and you're looking at that, look at your feet. And what I mean by that is look at the thing in front of you that you can control that needs to be done. One of the things where people get overwhelmed is they start to look at everything in front of them as if it's all the same level, like it's spread out on the horizon. And what you want to do is get it lined up like a line of soldiers
mm-hmm.
and you can only see the first soldier
mm-hmm.
and that's the one you deal with. And then when the
that's
next one
image.
Comes, you deal with
knock
that one.
Knock that one over.
Knock that one over. Knock that one over. I don't know, bowling mm-hmm. pin if you want to accept those, not in a V-shaped, in a line. And so the way that you keep your head about you as it starts to get that like, oh no, is right in front of you. And that sometimes means it's the 2-year-old who has smeared her, you know,
poop.
Peanut butter sandwich. I wasn't going to say poop. It's going to say peanut butter sandwich all over the table, but okay, poop on the walls. That, and you just want to lie down and cry because your next thought is, but I was working on my article. Get the article behind the poop and deal with the poop. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Thanks for listening. And everybody wash your hands and stay safe.
And don't touch your face.
Bye.
Bye.